Welcome to another episode of Rough Talk VR, a weekly podcast with in-depth game reviews, exclusive developer interviews, and the latest MetaQuest and virtual reality news. We join our hosts, the father-son team of D. Scruffles and Stratus today, as they spend another episode breaking down and discussing the world of virtual reality.
Hey, welcome to this episode of Rough Talk VR. Today we're joined with an interview that I'm so excited for. I mean, we've been always asking our listeners, you know, who do you want on the show? Yeah. And the number one is always the man we have today. Today we're joined with Guy Gooden. Yeah, for sure. We're joined with Guy Gooden, the creator of Virtual Desktop, one of the most popular apps on the MetaQuest store. Pretty much anybody that uses their Quest headset to play PC VR. I mean, there's a small percentage at this point that are still doing, you know, the Quest Link, but it's Virtual Desktop or it's Air Link. And that's pretty much
the
way it goes.
Two right there, yeah.
But before I get too carried away, Guy, do you mind to introduce yourself a little bit better for the listeners? Tell them, you know, who you are and what exactly Virtual Desktop is.
Sure. Thanks for having me. So Virtual Desktop is an app I started in 2014 when the first wired PC VR headsets arrived. And I wanted a way to use my computer while I was wearing the VR headset. So that's where the idea came from. And I've been working in this space for 10 years now.
That's a quick 10 years, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It kind of flies by fast. And, you know, what kind of inspired you to create Virtual Desktop? Did you feel like that there was a need for it that wasn't yet existing? Was there other players in the field at that time? You know, what kind of sparked you to create Virtual Desktop?
Yeah, well, when I first read about the headset and saw the Kickstarter videos and all that, I saw, well, it's connected to the PC. And then when I got it, the first thing that I just wanted to play with it, see how it's like, just for fun. And then when I got it, I was surprised that there's, you know, it's connected to the PC with a cable. How come you can't see your monitor? And, you know, I didn't really understand that you need to have a fully fledged game running in order to render in stereoscopic VR, right? The whole thing. So I thought, oh, it would actually be nice if you could use your computer and stay in VR so you could launch a game, then go back to your desktop and then launch another game without having to take off the headset. Because at the time you had to take off the headset, go on your PC, launch your game, put it back on. And it was, the user experience was kind of bad. So I thought maybe I could do a little tool for fun in my spare time that I could, you know, use my computer in VR. So that's how it all started.
A tool in your spare time for fun.
That
yeah.
Changed the whole game.
Yeah. Now one of the most popular apps on.
So I'm curious, have you always been the type of person that if you run into something that for your own reasons makes something better, you're just going to design and build it for that reason? Or was this like the first time you were like, well, I'm just doing it?
Well, the thing is, I was working part-time and I had lots of free time back in 2014. So I was kind of, I wanted to learn new things. So I delved in a bit into like iPhone type of programs. I started working on that, but I didn't really like the development environment and all that Apple had. So I thought, let me see if there's anything cool out there. And so I saw those Oculus headsets and they had an SDK. So I thought, it's 3D. I'm not super familiar with that, but let me try to learn new things. So it was more of a way to try to learn new things that I got into it.
And professionally, were you a software developer, you know, for work too? Or is this just, that was a completely a hobby?
No, I was, I've been working in the game industry for 12 years before that. I built tools for various video game companies. I built like level editors, texture conversion tools, that type of stuff. And so I've never really built a game or worked in engines or 3D, but it was not too far from what I was used to. So
that's pretty cool stuff.
Thank God you did.
Yeah. And do you still do that side at all? Or is it all Virtual Desktop at this point?
No, in 2017, I switched to working full-time in VR. So I back then I was in California and I only had like a worker visa, so I couldn't do VR full-time. So I decided with my wife to go back to Canada, start my own business and start full-time in 2017. And now 7 years later, we're back in California and I keep working full-time.
And Virtual Desktop's always pumping out updates. It's kind of a beast that never stops. I mean, is that something that's because you always have new ideas of things that you want to implement? Or is it every time the headset or the software changes, you need to be on there to adapt to that as well?
Most of the ideas in the app comes from the community. Like from the beginning, I was pushing, like I was putting updates on the Oculus forums at the time before Oculus Share and all that stuff. So just people using the app gave me ideas. Oh, it would be nice if you could do 3D movies. I thought, okay, I'll try that. So in 2015 or something, I pushed an update that added 3D ability to do SBS videos and over under videos. And now there are apps that are built that just do that. So yeah, we're just ideas from the community.
Like Big Screen is a great example of that as well. But you're constantly innovating with features. I think I read something, if I'm not crazy, that you're working on bringing upper body tracking or something like that to virtual desktop. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, in the recent Quest SDK, they added inside out full body tracking, at least for the arms and torso. So I'm just using that and forwarding that to the PC. And right now, if games want to develop and use those extensions in OpenXR, they can. But the biggest use case is VR chat. People wanted to use those. And since VR chat is using older OpenVR, one of the people from the community said, oh, I can probably write something that converts the full body tracking into vibe trackers and all that. And so it's people in the community that have been building this actually in the last few weeks.
So you'll be able to go into VR chat by connecting your Quest 3 to PC VR through virtual desktop. You'll be able to go into VR chat and have some, even if mobility. It's a little rough, some upper body tracking.
Yep. You'll see your vibe trackers in Steam VR, and you'll move around and it'll simulate that you have like 8 or 10 trackers. I don't remember the number, but
that's pretty impressive for just standalone, no additional attachments. Well, not standalone, you know, wirelessly connected to the, but no like trackers actually attached to you. That's incredible. Great.
Yeah, the cameras are able to track the upper body. The legs are just estimated based on what you're doing. So it's not super accurate, but it's still pretty good.
And they call it AI estimation for the legs, which, you know, I'm sure in 6 months, a year is going to be much different than we see it today.
If it's somehow learning and able to, then yeah, it's got nowhere to go but better.
And how does it compare, the, you know, the upper body tracking wise, how does it compare to actually putting on, you know, physical trackers?
Well, it's not as accurate. Like, depending on where you are looking, it might not catch exactly where you move, whereas with the tracker, it's one-to-one, right? And so it's a good estimation. It's not perfect, but I think it does a pretty good job. There's some videos online that are circulating showing what it does.
Yeah, it's a start at the very least. And, you know, we have some listener questions. I always let our listeners who are Patreon members, you know, submit some questions if they want.
Well, and this is one that was even through the Discord community, I think, was a...
Yeah, I blasted out the other week again for... You know, I do it a bunch, and again, he was the number one requested when I did. So people were excited for it. And one of the listener questions we actually got is if there's plans to bring these type of features, like upper body tracking, to other headsets such as Pico.
Well, that's up to Pico to add those extensions. So as soon as they add the extensions, it's just a matter of flipping a switch on my side to support it. If they behave the same way, if they work the same way, then for the most part, they've kind of copied what Meta has been doing. So it's been fairly easy, but it's up to Pico at this point.
Understood. And how hands-on are you with working with actual game studios and communicating with developers in order to properly implement things, you know, with their games?
I'd say it's a little rough. Some developers will reach out and say, oh, there's this issue people are reporting with virtual desktop, blah, blah, blah. And they, you know, so I can look into it and help them or change the way that I launched the game or things like that. But for the most part, the developers are not reaching out and they're rarely testing with virtual desktop. They tend to just test with AirLink and Link because it's the free version of the app that they have. So it's a little hard, but sometimes I'll reach out to them and I'll try to work with them for any issues. But I'd say for 90% of the time, things should just work out of the box right away. So there shouldn't be any need.
I feel like if I was it's easy for me to say developers are already so strapped doing 100 things, marketing, innovating. There's so much to it. But I feel like, you know, if you have a PC VR game or you know, PC VR enhancements, there's going to be a large percentage of your user base that are using virtual desktop.
Yeah.
And you seem very responsive. It doesn't seem like if somebody reaches out, you're going to be too hard to get a hold of.
Yeah. My Twitter DMs are open. So if anybody wants to reach out, I'm always answering questions or on Discord too.
At this point, are you still playing VR games as well? You know, how much are you able to get in as a gamer? No, it's pretty much all as the technical side.
I haven't played any VR games since Half-Life Alyx probably, and so it's been a while.
Is that due to a lack of interest or just no time with everything going on?
It's a bit of both. There hasn't been really something that piqued my interest. Like I'm a PC gamer mostly, so like all the Quest native games, that's really just not for me. And I'm not good with my stability, so standing up to play games is not my thing at all. So I'd rather sit down and play with, you know, regular games.
Understood. And I actually think that you're a good one to have on, as we're primarily, you know, Quest users. So oftentimes we're, you know, very vocal of, you know, the positivity of the Quest and everything like that. But sometimes it's good to get some opposing
different perspective. Absolutely.
I'm not going to say that you're negative about the Quest or anything like that, but in your eyes, as somebody that started in 2015, what's it like seeing the shift from a PC VR focus, gaming wise for VR, to more of the standalone Quest ecosystem?
I think it's great to not have a cable and be totally wireless. I think that removes a lot of friction. So I'm all for it, actually. The only downside that I see right now is that it's becoming only one company owning everything, which is a problem. Like I think competition is really good. And right now there isn't much, right? There's Meta and then there's Pico, but they're not even selling in North America. So I think that's an issue.
No, I'd agree with that. We've discussed it a lot that the more players that can come into the game, the better the game will be, and it'll challenge the other companies to up their game. It's just a win for everybody.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's in the Pico situation, I just find sad that they're not being sold in North America. It was a good opportunity. And
it was a great headset too. The Pico 4 was pretty amazing for the price. So,
yeah. So hopefully things will get, but yeah, no, we love the idea of the more competition, the better. It's a win for everybody. And yes, some won't make it, but the ones that do, it's just gonna better where it should go.
Yeah, you see how fast Meta starts pushing out some software updates with, like, you know, the VR, the spatial video being able to be watched. Mm-hmm. As soon as Apple puts it out or they're getting ready to put out, it's like, even if it was in development, any bit of competition pushes innovation.
Better innovation.
Yeah.
And on that note, there was an app in App Lab that already played spatial videos, but unfortunately they stuck in App Lab. They're not allowed on the store. And then Meta claimed that they had spatial videos, but actually they were second. Someone, an indie developer, had it first in App Lab.
In App Lab.
Yeah. It's always
but no one heard about it because it's in App Lab, which is terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's become the toughest area I've seen from the development standpoint, that like, you now, and you can't just develop your game now. You really have to have a marketing team, mm-hmm. PR teams. You got to have people talking about it and push it, and then make all the technical corrections to eventually go to the store under, you know,
cross your fingers that they approve you, because it's almost impossible to, they'll tell you, oh, put it on App Lab. If it does well, then we'll promote it to the store. So most new companies or people who want to do their first game, or if they don't have like the backing of a well-known publisher, it's really hard for anybody to get on the store. And I think that's just sad, because there's some great ideas out there.
Yeah, we're grateful, and I guess had the benefit of finding out from like day one, mm-hmm. we were on App Lab, and it was like this, but we've always made the argument that it should be easier accessible.
Yeah.
From it just even to help, you know, market the product, and knowing that not all of them are, they don't even want to go to the store. It could just be to get it out there. But no, the ease of accessibility for finding App Lab would be a home run.
Even if it's just in the app, clicking a couple buttons on the main you know, homepage of the store and saying view App Lab games. Then you get a nice little like list of top selling or top viewed even.
Not a don't dare spell it wrong because it'll never
At least you can't search it either. So
the only search engine that doesn't allow for mistakes.
What? Hey, well, that's great. Well, AirLink is great. It's like I said, probably the other most used way that people use their Quest headset to game. Virtual desktop does a lot more as well too, like, you know, completely projecting your screen onto your headset. You know, although those features are pretty big, do you find that most people use virtual desktop for more of the gaming side, or do you have a surprisingly large base that just uses it for more just screen usage?
Well, initially, when I had the app on Gear VR and Go, it was just the desktop. But then everybody was asking me, oh, when can we stream VR games? And initially I had no plan of adding that because I thought it was kind of janky. I had tried ALVR and I find it not really comfortable and it was very quirky to set up and all that. So I was thinking, well, maybe I could give it a try and try to do a better job, make it easier for folks to start their games and all that. So after lots of people requested the feature, I thought, okay, I'll give it a try. So when 2019, I decided to work on it and implement it. And I had it ready just after the Quest launch. And so it's one of those things where the people pushed for it and eventually I got to do it.
I love the fact that you're willing to do that though, because not every person would, yes, community speak, but takes a lot to be able to hear it about your own product, let alone be like, all right, this is what I'll put my time into because people want this. That's a direction people don't, you know, make that decision to turn it, but you're willing to go with it. And hey, didn't plan on it, but if it's what everyone wants and it's going to make for a better thing for everyone, then you'll do it. That's incredible.
And how involved are you with like the virtual desktop community to kind of dictate your next updates and features?
Well, I'm on the Discord. I'm there every day and I help people and I see what are the friction points. And I try to help there every day and answer questions. So I have a good team of, moderators on Discord who are, you know, telling me, oh, by the way, Guy, this isn't working correctly, or lots of people are requesting this or that. So they're really, helping me kind of funnel what are the things I should be working on.
And are you a solo dev? You know, obviously you have your moderator team on the Discord helping and everything like that, but in terms of the actual development side, are you completely a solo dev on this project?
Well, right now we're three people working on it, but I'd say two programmers, one artist who does a little bit of programming as well, so and they're contractors, so I'm the only one who's you could say full time since the beginning, but yeah, I've had help.
I feel like that's a lot. Like that's hugely impressive for one to three people.
Well, I was going to say the amount of work that goes into it, as well as, you know, keeping things updated and fixing any issues that no one knew existed with a team of mainly one stretched out to three. That's real impressive.
Yeah. I mean, how much of
that's
your,
a lot of work.
How many hours of your day would you say go into either working on virtual desktop or engaging with the community, you know, bug reports, all that stuff?
It's the entire day, every day, 7 days a week. It never stops. Like it's at least 16 hours a day. So,
and it's never ends, really. Not anything that burns you out, something that you love?
Well, it's getting a little tiring, I don't say, after that many years. But I still enjoy working in this space. So for now, I'll keep doing what I'm doing because it's fun. But I have to say that these past couple of years have been harder because the average age of the user has decreased. So it's a lot harder to do support, you know, when the the people are kids and they don't listen to you, they don't read what you write, and it weighs on you a lot.
Yeah, sometimes kids and community support are a little tough.
Yeah.
So
I'm dying.
Yeah, but overall, you know, oh man, that's crazy. So you've actually gotten to see the actual, you know, matureness in the level of interaction in your own Discord decrease over the years?
Yeah, definitely. The early days when I opened the Discord, I think it was the Quest 1, it was mostly people 18, 35, you know, people who are into PC hardware, and, you know, they can troubleshoot stuff on their own, right? They don't really need help with stuff. Like, to give you an idea, my app on Steam, I received on average maybe one question or two a day in the discussion sections. On Quest, it's about 200 a day that we get. So, you know, it's insane. It never ends.
And, geez, so your Quest player size, is that just in questions? Or is, like, the player size of app usage actually pretty comparable?
No, it's higher on Quest for sure. But when it launched on Quest, initially it was like an older audience. But as the Quest 2 launched, that's when, because it was at a lower price, that's when the number of kids just grew like exponentially.
Oh, to be a kid and have access to a PC VR gaming computer.
And that's, at the time when the Quest 2 launched, people needed to sideload a patch in order to use PC VR. So the support was just insane, because we had to help kids set up a developer account and toggle developer mode. And for the average person, that's really, really hard. So,
Virtual desktop definitely removes friction in that whole
It's one of process. The downsides about making something that works well and can add the accessibility to so many people. Because, yeah, eventually the popularity, and as the audience grows, that's just another demographic that is going to fill that, what was a void. And, you know, what was really, in my opinion, was like enthusiasts and people who are in deep, to now it's accessible. Everybody can.
Well, for better or worse, for Guy, unfortunately, you know, there's other apps that do media watching, like you said earlier. You know, we have Big Screen Beyond. There's AirLink for connecting to games, but I can't think of another app that does a little bit of everything like Virtual Desktop does. So it's hard to find a comparison with that type of versatility. And, you know, just rolling out upper body tracking, are there more features that you're looking to implement into Virtual Desktop?
I definitely have a lot of stuff on our pipeline. I can't reveal too much because people like to copy what I'm doing, so I tend to keep those a secret. But for what's coming up, I have a multi-monitor support, so the ability to create virtual monitors and have more than one at the same time stream at the same quality, I should add. So that's been in the works for about a year now.
Wow, that's actually huge.
Mm-hmm.
And is there going to be a limit on the amount of monitors?
It's going to be 3 on the Quest 3 and 2 on the Quest 2 and other headsets.
3 monitors.
3 is pretty stacked.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
That adds a lot to the productivity, I guess, use cases of the Quest 2 and 3.
Mm-hmm. It comes down to the horsepower of the GPU. So I could add more at a lower quality, but I decided to stick to those just to keep the same image quality that people have for their screens right now and just limit it based on that so that you can keep same environments, the same resolution and all that. So.
Wow. How big of a challenge has that been to get working? Like you say, you seem pretty focused on it has to be the same quality. So
yeah.
What's this been like?
I see the smile.
It's been crazy. Lots of optimizations and profiling and making sure that things still work. So it's been a lot of work. Hopefully in the coming weeks, we should have a beta and try to roll out to test it more.
Is QA a pain, you know, testing on all these different headsets in order to roll out an update like this?
Well, thankfully, the community is awesome. So what I do is us developers, we try to test as much as we can. And then when we think we have it nailed down and there are no known bugs, we release a beta and have the community help us find, you know, some small issues that we haven't found. And the community is awesome. Like, they'll report anything they see that's no longer working or something we broke. So right now we're running a beta for the full body tracking feature, and there's lots of feedback, lots of, you know, we can see there's friction here. We should probably simplify that, or we broke this thing inadvertently and we didn't realize. So the community is awesome. They're able to help us find those issues.
That's awesome. And then another one that was a community one. I don't have a Pimax. Maybe you actually do have a Pimax app, but we had one of our listeners ask, do you have plans to bring virtual desktop to the Pimax Crystal?
Not at the moment. It's too small of a market, and you know, I have to kind of prioritize which devices I had support for. Like, for example, I added the HTC XR Elite, and I spent probably, well, it wasn't a year of time, but it took a year to start development and get it working on the headset. And the sales were just really, really bad. So all this time was, well, not wasted, but it was not worth the whole development effort to support it.
So it's pretty complex to bring virtual desktop to a new platform, new headset.
Well, it depends on the OpenXR runtime that the headset has. Pico, for example, which was much easier because they reuse the same extensions that Quest has. So it's pretty straightforward. I just basically, when something doesn't work, I tell them, this works on Quest, this doesn't work on Pico, can you fix this? A couple of weeks later, they get me an update that fixes the issue, and then I can go down the list of things that needs to work in order to get the app working. So it was much easier with HTC. They initially didn't have even OpenXR, so I told them, no, I can't. It needs to support OpenXR, otherwise it pull my hair out to support some other SDK. Because I don't use Unity or Unreal, so I'm basically coding against the OpenXR runtime directly. So it's a lot more work, but at the same time, I get to have access to lower level stuff, and I have a lot more power into what kind of features I can add.
Wow! So no engine, just completely all self-coded.
Yeah, you don't ever hear that.
Yeah, that's very rare. Do you ever have a thought in your head like, oh, I wish I went engine, or are you happy with the route you went with that?
No, I'm actually very happy that I've chosen that path, because it gives me a lot of flexibility. Sometimes when somebody asks for something that seems very simple because all the other apps do it, for me, it's really, really hard. And then I wonder, why did I choose this path? But no, I think it's the right path. In the end, I wouldn't be able to do VR streaming with a Unity app, I think. So, you know.
Now, it sounds like you definitely have more control when you're not at the constraints of something that someone else is. I mean, it's just a matter of you putting in the time, I suppose, to make it happen. But talk about somebody that loves a challenge. That's insane. Like, I mean, really, to take on any part of this is just like, I'm looking at the amount of work, and there's keywords I hear, you know, like 16-hour days on it. And holy Moses, man. To put in that kind of like, it's something that people need to, and I hope they hear that, because it's not easy. You know, you have to put in this amount of time for it to be the product you want, as well as your own standards that you're of course, I think are at a higher level than some they might have taken a little easier route here and there. But I got to give props. It's like, you can't do this because you don't love the VR space, mm-hmm. you know, because there's no way you'd go mentally insane if you had to do this forcefully. So it's just awesome to hear.
Yeah. And again, it does the VR industry a great service. Hopefully we see, hopefully we see, you know, future headsets from Samsung, Google. Hopefully we see them support OpenXR and make, you know, virtual desktop easy to bring, because, you know, I think that it's going to be essential for those headsets to have compatibility to easily bring, you know, three screens to your headset. That's huge.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And then we had another great listener question that was asking, you know, reflecting on the impact of virtual desktop and enhancing virtual interactions, to you, what has been the single biggest contribution so far from virtual desktop?
Well, I think it is the fact that I popularized the ability to play PC VR over a wireless connection. Because before I released my feature, there was like, ALVR was a thing, but it was very niche and really hard to set up. But once people saw how easy it can be done, then everybody jumped on board. Meta did, and then Pico, they had their own streaming assistant. HTC has their own streaming assistant. Like everyone, every headset now that releases has their own streaming solution built into it. So
is there, you know, not to hype up your own product or something like that, what would you say are the aspects about virtual desktop that make it, you know, in certain ways superior, to the native built-in ones?
I think I provide more options to configure the quality of the experience. So I let you choose, you know, gamma correction, the resolution directly in VR, so you can choose which resolution it's telling the game that your headset is at, bit rates, frame rates, codec, everything you can configure from A to Z. I think that's a big selling point. I also do, in partnership with Qualcomm, I added synchronous space warp, which is the ability to have the game run at half frame rate and then have the headset extrapolate the other half. So your PC renders 60 frames per second, and then the headset extrapolates the other 60 frames. So you get a 120 FPS, but your PC does only half the work and the headset does the other half. So that kind of separate rendering is really something that helps people that have lower end machines. So that's, I think that's quite a unique feature.
I don't mean to stroke your ego.
That's genius nothing. Though, dude.
It's the same that's stuff that, funny. That meta, you know, you're doing with a team of, you know, 1 to 3, what, you know, is a big project for Meta to do in the Quest with their, you know, application space warp and stuff like that. The fact that you're able in a team of 1 to 3 to bring these features to virtual desktop is unbelievably mm-hmm. impressive. You know, you throw that out casually, but what was that like developing that whole, you know, reprojection software and all that?
Well, I didn't implement the whole, like, Qualcomm did, like, the plan of the work. Like, they were the ones who said, hey, we have this motion extrapolation library. We could tweak it and make it work for you. So I worked together with them to bring this to life. But it was really awesome to work with people that, because I don't know anything about 3D or all the math involved in that. Like, I'm totally clueless, right? So, like, I don't know. Like, I don't even know OpenGL really well. And that's what I'm using in my app, right? So I'm mostly trial and error until it works. So to work with people that are that disqualified, it was really awesome.
And that's cool that they're willing to reach out to individual app developers and go, look, you know, we're involved in the VR space. You have a leading app in the VR space. Let's work together and make everything even better. That's really cool. So was that a situation that they just approached you out of the blue?
Yeah, exactly.
That's really cool.
It's got to feel really good, too, when you're getting that message that they want to talk to you about.
Yeah. Well, again, just that type of recognition.
Kind of validates the, you know, I mean, granted, you can tell through analytics and stuff, but there's certain things that I think personally would validate. Like, you know, I'm doing good. I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah, we have a lot of PC VR users in our Discord, and mm-hmm. I'd say the, you know, some use AirLink, but I'd say the majority definitely use virtual desktop.
Yeah.
It's the go-to. I mean, it's built up quite a reputation for anybody that wants to do PC VR gaming. So the upper body tracking, though, that's cutting edge stuff. Do you find that VR chat is one of the, you know, those type of social things are like one of the main use cases of virtual desktop at this point?
Yeah, the three main use case are people who play VR chat. There's the simmers that do flight simulator, DCS, that kind of stuff. And the other one are well, I'm not sure if they're really a category, but they're people who want to use virtual desktop as a monitor replacement. But I don't recommend this because it's still pretty rough for comfort and resolution and all that, right? So I think most players who use virtual desktop nowadays are for the VR streaming feature. I'd say probably 90%, and it's mostly VR chat and simmers. Those are the ones that come back again and again.
And I feel like flight sims, driving sims, any type of sim in a vehicle, yep. I feel like that's a one that you have to be pinpoint accurate with, because that's, in my experience, those hardcore sim fans are very...
Oh, yeah. They're very picky. If you see a frame glitch, something, they'll let you know.
Even though it's quite ridiculous what's going on in the app, it's going wirelessly. You know, you think of a lot of people's sim setups. I've seen people with the full wheel setup,
spend
the chair.
$20,000 on a sim setup easily.
Yeah.
Easily.
So the fact that virtual desktop is able to pull that off, I wouldn't have expected that because it's so high performance demanding. So that's pretty cool stuff. And then
there's someone recently who added, so we added this VR pass-through feature where we choose a color, let's say green, and make it transparent so that you can have your pass through. And someone with like a cockpit set up, like a physical cockpit in their room, built this thing with color pass through so that they could see their actual cockpit of airplane, like physical model that they had, integrated in virtual desktop and mixed with flight simulator. It was insane. Like, and it's something that costs probably thousands of dollars anyway. And that person was like super happy because of the VR pass through feature, which we never designed that for it, but they found a way to use it and kind of jerry rig something together. It was pretty awesome.
So how often is the community going crazy with your app and doing things that you would have never thought to do like that?
All the time.
After all these years, it's still a fun day.
Yeah. Do you have any, you know, I know it's sometimes it's tough. People ask you like, what's your favorite or something? You go, whoa, I wasn't expecting anything. But do you have any other ones that off the top of your head stick out that people have kind of taken virtual desktop and run a bit wild with?
A couple of years ago, there was it was with the Steam, the classic version on Steam. Someone built like a simulator where they sit in a chair that, you know, has physically moved, kind of like at a Disney ride or something. And they put a VR headset and they use virtual desktop for a 360 video integration. So some people built some crazy stuff with my app that it was never intended to be used for. So, every week I see something on YouTube like, huh, I haven't thought about that. That's kind of cool.
It's just cool to see that people are figuring out ways to use it in ways that it wasn't even designed for us, let's say, but someone's like, I bet you I can use it to do this. And then it works. And it's just one more, to me, it's just another check in the box of how solid of an app it is. So
yeah, even as VR grows to more of a casual market, you know, kids and stuff like that, there always will be that hardcore, crazy, tech savvy, you know, have the spending money available, the disposable income, that are willing to go a little buck wild and have some fun with software.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool to see that type of stuff. I'm a sucker for that. And another fan question, we had another listener question. Somebody wanted to know, you know, I mean, geez, right off the top, you've been involved in the industry since 2015, coming on a decade. And that kind of makes you a little bit of an expert, somebody who knows a thing or two at this point.
I would say he's an OG for sure. Yeah.
In your opinion, you know, where do you see things going in the VR/XR space over the next, you know, 5 years?
It's really hard to predict things, because if you asked me back in the RIP day if I would have predicted that we'd have standalone headsets that were wireless, I'd say for sure that we won't have that, but here we are. So I think we're going to see a reduction in size of headsets and higher resolution. But I'm sure if we're going to get to the point where they're just glasses, I think we're still going to have bricks on our face for a while. So I think 5 years, just improvements in size and resolution. That's the hope I have.
And then kind of on another angle of that same question, is there anything that's coming in the next, you know, 5-10 years that excites you about the VR industry? Like AR glasses and stuff like that?
Yeah, well, hopefully, because right now there are no real AR glasses that you can develop an app for. There are the X-Real, I believe, or they changed name again. I don't remember their name. anyway. But they don't really have OpenXR support and they don't really have an app store. So it's really hard to develop for those. But I like what Apple is doing, where they're kind of targeting a different use case. It's not games. It's more like productivity. So it was kind of my initial idea to be able to work in VR, but I really don't do that because I don't think we're there yet in terms of resolution and comfort. But I think Apple is making great strides in that. So I'm looking forward to supporting the Apple Vision Pro in the future. But it's not coming anytime soon. People always ask me what's the ETA is, because Apple is it's a completely different platform. I have to use a different development environment, different tools, different language even. So, you know, it's going to take a while.
Do you have a Vision Pro?
I do, yes.
So you at least you physically have one, you know, like you said, still a long way away. It's not coming, but that's cool to hear that you're interested in it at some point. whether that be 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years. At some point, it's on your radar. You want Vision Pro support?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
That's cool. And I think as things get lighter and stuff, you know, I know Meta hypes up their plans with by like 2030, I think is what they say. They want to have glasses with a neural wristband control. You know, we're hitting the future quick, but I agree, lighter, more comfortable in order to do the productivity side where you're actually going to see people working in an office space. You know, definitely that's the highest priority, no doubt. And I love the aspect of the story of virtual desktop that, I mean, most people use it for gaming, but for you, you wanted the working side and the productivity side. But it'll be interesting in 5 years, 10 years, maybe it's the opposite. Maybe it's much more 50-50. Maybe things kind of come full circle. And now you're, instead of focusing so much on the gaming side, now you really have to pump out all the productivity features of virtual desktop.
I've been kind of pushing aside at the moment because everybody who uses the app, it's for watching movies, playing games. It's content. It's watching content. So lots of people buy the headset, buy my app thinking they'll work in VR, but nobody actually does it for more than a week. And so
you're not even advocating it. You're more, hey, it's not ready. Not even software side, hardware side. It's not ready yet.
Yeah. I don't advertise it. I don't even say, I think in my app description, work in VR, I don't even mention that because I think it's people are going to be disappointed.
Well, that's smart though. You know,
if you want to organically, you could figure it out.
Yeah, let somebody go in there and go, oh my God, I can open up three.
I bet you I could work in this space.
Yeah.
I think as the headsets get a little slimmer, you'll see the borders start coming. I even ski goggle size would be.
Hand tracking gets better. And
you can ski like for that. 8 hours. No reason. You know what I'm saying?
So what's your thoughts on the Vision Pro as you're using it? Of course, it's their first edition of the headset, but what's your thoughts?
Well, I think it's a great V1 product. There's lots of polish. I like the fact that you don't get any graphical glitches or like image catching up to you. Like it's always like the way it handles poorly performing apps works really well. So I think they've made great strides there. The resolution is awesome. Comfort-wise, it's heavy. It's not comfortable for long, so I'm not a big fan of that part. But we have to remember that it's like a two-year-old headset at this point. They kind of had that for a while. So I have a feeling that in a few years when they do like a version 2 of this, I think it will be a lot better. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I know there's already rumors of version 2 starting production late 2025 or early 2026, I think was what I was reading on Upload VR. So at least it doesn't seem like that they're a one and done. They're in it for the long haul.
So we're happy they're at least in it for the shortcoming amount of years. And then we'll see. As long as people are buying them, it's just what they're using them for at the moment is what I'm curious. Like, I don't know who's really going into work and being like, got my Vision Pro.
You think the biggest hurdle for it is comfort, though? In using the Vision Pro?
Yeah, definitely comfort. Resolution is pretty good. You can read clearly. It's really just front heavy. So
you think it's
the main barrier.
You think it just needs to get lighter overall? Do you think that they could do better with weight distribution? What do you think is the biggest hurdle in that?
I think they could just reduce the weight with lighter components. And I mean, personally, I would remove the glass front. I would remove the screen in front. That's totally pointless. Nobody sees your eyes anyway. So like you said, can you see my eyes? No, I just, I could kind of see your eye. It's pointless. Just get rid of it. That's it. Or put something that works, then maybe it would be useful. But at the moment, I think it's a gimmick.
And is that adding a lot of front weight to it?
Well, I'm sure it is. Because it's a screen, it's power, it's compute that you kind of waste for that. So there's probably some cameras too that are there that are used only for the, it's hard to know how much weight is only used for this feature, but I have a feeling they could trim a lot on that part.
No, I mean, just like a race car, anything you can take off it doesn't matter how small, it could be a little nut or bolt, it's gonna, shit adds up. Mm-hmm. No, and the only complaint I've heard from them really is the, I can't spend more than, 45 minutes on it before I want to peel my face off. But
well, the most controversial part of it, besides the price or anything else like that, the number one, in my opinion, that I've heard some people love and some people hate conceptually, but I'd love to know your thoughts on it, is the wired battery attachment. Instead of the battery being inside the headset, you have the little puck. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's actually a great idea to have an external puck, because once you put it in your pocket and you wear it, you kind of forget about it. So it's not a big deal to have it. The thing you have to remember is that it's about 3 times this power of what the Quest 3 has, because the onboard processing is a lot more intensive, consumes a lot more power than what the Quest 3 uses. So they kind of didn't really have a choice to put it in an external pack on this. They wanted to have like a really, really heavy headset.
Yeah, I'm in a weird spot with it, because my gut reaction when I heard it was like, oh no, that's a bad idea. But then there's people that I respect a lot in the industry, like yourself, you just said it, another one, Robin Mulder of 3 Pound Games. I heard her reaction to it when we were talking with her, and she went crazy. She's like, hell yeah, that's how it should have been since day one. I saw an interview with Palmer Luckey where he was saying it was a good idea. I was like, damn, all these other people are saying it's a good idea, and I'm just on instinct, have a bad gut reaction to it.
I'd like it better if there was no wire. So if you could have like,
I don't know how you would do a wireless battery signal.
Wireless battery transfer, then I think that'd be the ultimate, because then you're trimming a whole bunch of weight.
You haven't found any issue with the wire though? Gets doesn't get in the way for you at all?
Well, it's it gets tangled a lot, because it's very, it's a slim cable. It's not like a link cable. It's much thinner. It moves better. But that has the side effect that it twists a lot. So every time you put it on, you have to untwist the cable, make sure it's straight. And but otherwise, I think it's great that they took a different approach. Personally, I think we're gonna maybe see some more VR headsets use this approach. So it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, I'm real curious of what we see. Google, Samsung, all that side. Even a Quest Pro 2. I'm curious to see what comes of that.
I'm excited every time somebody new. Or current makes a change.
Yeah.
It's for the better. It's like lessons are being learned.
Yeah. I mean, I know people have quit out of the VR market before other big, manufacturers have gone into the past, but I feel like it's a different landscape in 2024.
Times have changed.
Yeah. Things are a little bit more profitable, maybe, it's a different level of hype. Apple's involved, it's a little bit more consumer accepted. I remember like 2 years ago, it was kind of like geeky to wear a headset. Now you see T-Pain walking around with it, making videos. As soon as Apple gets involved, it's a little trendy. So
it helps push it more to the mainstream audience than just simply Meta. Because some people have beef with Meta as a whole. It's like, you're never going to sell them that they make a good product. Where Apple, they
got an iPhone, a Mac,
they got a fan
Apple phone. Watch. AirPods.
An extensive fan club.
Yeah.
So it just legitimizes and I think from a business standpoint, it lets people know that the industry is now a little more serious.
A little bit more legit, yes.
Correct. And it, it's like booking a good tenant. Others will come because of that, that one. So they're definitely helping the industry.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a MetaQuest main user, but I think that having Apple in the ecosystem just helps everybody. Like I said, pushes Meta a little bit to innovating, maybe even if it's features they were already working on, just kind of, poke the bear a little bit, kind of move things along. And I think the more players that enter the market.
Healthy competition.
Yeah. So one last question I got to know, and then we can let you go. I know you're a busy man. Do you ever wish that there was, kind of on that same note, direct competitor to Virtual Desktop that did kind of all the same things to push you to innovate? Or do you like being the only player in the market?
Well, there kind of is, or it's like subset of the features. Like for video players, there are a bunch that exist, right? For desktop streaming, there's Big Screen, there's Immerse, there are various ones. And for the VR streaming feature, there's Link and AirLink and BLVR and Steam Link. So there's competition. It's just that there's not one that has all those features, but I don't think someone would be that crazy to do all that.
course not. That's why there's only one-offs of each feature. It's mm-hmm. no, the only way for somebody to do it would be if they all got together and went, hey, if we all worked as one, we could do this. But then to find out you pretty much solely did it.
It's 10 years of starting as one thing and you slowly added more features to it. So do you think that if you set out to make virtual desktop today, starting from scratch, that with all the features it would even be achievable? Or do you think you were only able to do it because you kind of built up feature at a time?
Definitely would not be something you could scope and say, let's do this within the next few years because it's too much work. If I was to restart from scratch, now that I know everything that I know, would probably take me a lot less time. But I think most of the things that I've learned is some things like some features are more important than others. I spent I don't know how many months on certain things that have not been used at all. Like I spent months on positional audio for the app on Steam, so that when you watch like a movie, it can simulate that you have a 7.1 surround sound system. And all that positional audio. And then I put it in an update and nobody even noticed or paid attention or asked questions about it. And I was like, I don't know how many months I spent on that. And it was kind of a waste.
And to me, if that sounds like a big addition too. It's like, wow, you're getting some kind of like pretty, spatial audio, you know?
If it's going to replicate a full 7.1 surround sound in your ears and you don't even notice it, I'd be sad.
Yeah.
I'd be really sad. I get it. I mean, but it's there. So, I mean, whether it was as appreciated as the love you put into it, you know, different story, but it exists. So somebody loves it.
That might also be a victim of like a great sound score in a game or a movie, the best of the best. You don't notice. It just flows with it and everything like that. So it could just be that like
blended in.
People were getting more immersed and they didn't know why. Like they didn't even register it because of the sound. It's because
didn't even know why. Give someone else credit for it.
I think anything audio wise in media is
always get shafted. Yeah.
Yeah. If it's good, you don't notice it. You only notice it if it's bad. You're going to go, oh my God, the audio is so bad. But you never go.
Quest headset. The audio's never sounded better. I don't know why.
Correct. You'll only notice the soundtrack if it feels out of place. Oh, you know, if the soundtrack is good in a game or a movie.
That's a good update, though.
Yeah.
That's a really good one.
If anybody didn't know about it, that's a nice little throw in. So before we let you go, did you have anything else you wanted to ask or anything like that?
No, a couple of the fan-related questions were ones that I was like really curious of. But I knew this was going to be a phenomenal interview to have anyways, but the work ethic, as everyone insane. We speak to in the VR space, is it's like there's people who work hard and then there's Guy, you know. It's like, and you're honest about it, you know, hey, I'm on Discord, I'm answering questions, I'm doing tech support for kids when technically maybe their parents should be doing this, you know, or there should be a class in school, and if you really want to learn, we'll teach you. It just blows my mind that you'd be this accessible to both the community as well as listen to the community and just keep pushing forward with it.
Yeah.
It's really mind boggling. And it just further laminates what we say when we talk to everybody. If you have a passion for what you do, it doesn't even have to be in the VR space. You can see the results of putting your time into what you enjoy doing. But for a human being to take on this level of challenge, get the hell out. It is not for everybody. You know, on paper, that's a tough sell. Like, hey, you only have to put in 16 hours a day. You got to be willing to change your design on a dime. You're going to make stuff, and sometimes people might not even notice, and you might personally think it was the greatest shit you did. It's an incredible, on paper, it's a tough sell, but I'm glad we have people like you that actually go, you know what? I like a challenge. Well, and think how this even all started just from, come on.
Yeah. And it does such a service for the PC VR
industry
community. Oh yeah. I mean,
we're going to be on PC VR soon.
I can't imagine there would be as many PC VR users through the Quest, if not for virtual desktop. Hell so no. In a way it's increasing PC VR game sales. It's making it more accessible.
It's an everybody wins.
Yeah.
Nobody losing in this except for Guy, who's got to like spend the duration of a 24-hour day invested into making our experiences better.
But again, the whole VR industry, the whole VR industry benefits because of it. So, yeah. You know, thank you so much for your time today. Again, I know you're a busy man. Before we let you go, anything you want to say, you know, maybe how people can find the Virtual Desktop Discord and stay up to date with the latest for Virtual Desktop?
You could find me on Twitter at VR Desktop, and the website is VRDesktop.net, and there's a link to our Discord there. So you can reach out, ask questions, or give suggestions. We have a feature request section. So if you have a good idea, well, if you don't ask, I won't be able to implement it. So
makes sense. And then I guess, you know what, because it came to mind, and I'm that guy that likes to hold people hostage. That's what I do.
After telling them.
But one more, just in case that we have a new VR listener and they're just getting into it. Is there any common mistakes with VR desktop or virtual desktop that you see people make when they first go into it? You know, the frequently asked questions, the top mistake.
Lots of people buy the app thinking they don't need a computer. And so you need a computer. If you want to play VR games, you need a Windows computer that's VR ready. So it has a NVIDIA a GTX 970 or better. It's not going to work on Mac for the VR streaming feature. You can still use your desktop on Mac, but just not stream VR games. I think that's probably the most common thing.
Okay. That makes sense too. It's don't go in thinking it's a cloud server.
First time ever, I thought, based on I'm like virtual desktop. Do you mean I can just have a desktop without needing my brain just wasn't rationally thinking this through.
You read the store description. It's pretty clear what's going on.
It slowly had come, but it was just that sight on scene. Yeah. Too good to be true. How's this going to, how am I going to have all these icons? Like, well, you're not. You're going to have to have your actual computer there, guy. So yeah, I fell victim to that. I didn't ask any questions about it. I just read.
Yeah.
On site. It just great.
But it's good that you read the description, because a lot of people don't read the app description. Just buy it.
Biggest recommendation I'll give to anybody on any app, read the description.
Always read the description. Yeah. Dude, you have to.
Don't go off a name. Great tips. Great tips. So thank you again, Guy. I'll let you go for real this time. You know, thank you for joining us. To the listeners, if you're a virtual desktop user, go check out their Discord, follow them on social media. Stay up to date with all the newest features coming to virtual desktop, like upper body tracking. That's pretty badass.
That's a big one.
Yeah. So thank you, everyone. Don't forget, like, subscribe, and stay tuned for next week. Ciao, ciao.
Take care.